Some of the most important influencing factors become the political factors. Now, whether it's a free economy, whether it is a market economy, a capitalist economy, a mixed economy, a centrally planned economy, at the end of the day, certain degree of political influence comes in. Now, when we talk about India, which is a mixed economy, and we have been talking about ease of doing business, then we should think that our perception globally, as far as political influence is concerned, should not be a problem. But then I'll just share a case of Vodafone Hutch from 2007, where the political influence, how that impacted a case which became known globally, and of course episodes like that would hurt our image and would also then become decision making factors as far as countries are concerned and companies are concerned for coming into our country and investing in our country. So taking you back a little bit, in 2007, Vodafone Hutch International had a wholly owned subsidiary, Hutch India, Hutchinson SR India, and they decided to sell their 67% stake. They wanted to exit India, and this 67% stake they decided to sell, and Vodafone was ready to buy it and bought it for $1.1 billion. So Hutchinson International is offloading its stake in Hutch SR India to Vodafone. Now, these entities were based in the Netherlands and the Cayman Islands. The money also exchanged hands internationally not on Indian territory. Only thing is that the shares which were transferred were of the Indian entity. But both Vodafone and Hutchinson International were not Indian entities. The money transaction happened internationally, but the share transfer was of the domestic entity. Now, because of this, the government handed a huge capital gains tax bill to Vodafone for this, Hutch Vodafone for this transaction. Now, as per Hutch and Vodafone, because they are not Indian entities, because the transaction did not happen in India, there was no tax liability that they were liable to pay on this sale of shares. And this went to court. The High Court ruled in favor of Hutch and Vodafone and put aside the tax demand, which went into crores, hundreds of crores, thousands of crores. However, that was disputed, appealed against by the government. It then went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court of India also in 2012 ruled in favor of Vodafone and said that this capital gains tax is, they are not Indian entities. The Indian tax authority does not come into play out here. And they put aside the tax demand for this Hutch Vodafone deal. However, the government, what they decided to do then is that they brought in an amendment to the tax laws in a way that this tax liability would become effective. And this amendment was brought in with retrospect from 1962. Because the Income Tax Act is Income Tax Act 1961, this levy made this new amendment effective with retrospect from 1962. And a 22,500 crore capital gains tax and withholding tax bill was handed over to the company. Now, clearly, Vodafone was not, the Vodafone Hutch deal the entities were not going to be happy with this, or they had no intention of paying this up. So they went to the Permanent Court of Arbitration in The Hague. So when they did that in Hague in Netherlands, when they did that, it was ruled in favor of the Hutch-Vodafone deal that the entities are not Indian. The deal, the transaction did not happen in India. So the Indian tax implication are unreasonable and unfair. And the tax order was put aside. And in fact, the Permanent Court of Arbitration, which is the oldest intergovernmental dispute resolution court, imposed on the Indian government a cost that they need to reimburse Vodafone for the legal fees and any other fees they've had to pay because of this ongoing legal issue. So this is in summary the chronology of what happened. Now, this is spoken about even till today. Offshoots of that and disputes, etc., keep coming up, and everyone remembers this deal. Now, obviously, regardless of government changes and all of those things, this would have hurt the image of India globally when it comes to ease of doing business. Globally, when it comes to what sort of regulatory environment, legal environment, tax structure are they going to confront when they come to India, which is a mixed economy. It's not even like it's a controlled economy. Now, these things become influencing factors which can dissuade companies and entities from entering certain markets. Now, India is an economy. Economy is for the people, by the people, the largest democracy in the world. And majority of the countries of the world, we'll see, are democracies. As of 2017, 96 out of 167 countries, with a population of more than 500,000, were democracies. And that is the democracies where it is for the people, by the people. We are one of the largest democracies, and we see our election every 5 years. Now, totalitarianism is, again, when we come to, countries like Iran, Afghanistan, we have seen what's going on in Iran after the, because of that poor lady who was, who died, unfortunately, because of the hijab issue. And after that, the protests that started out there. And we have seen the number of, executions which have happened with sham trials as a result. North Korea, which is completely cut off, when you go, even if you get some insight into Pyongyang, the capital, as far as the rest of North Korea is concerned, there is famine, poverty. They have no clue of what exists in the world other than the misery that they live in. We have tribal economies like Kenya, Uganda, and of course we have right-wing, China, where yes, the state is very, very authoritarian and imposing and powerful, but yet economic growth has happened. So China is that example where where they have development has happened, though of course they have blocked a lot of the international giants from coming in. They have their own way of doing business. When you reach if you're in transit at a Chinese airport, you will see that a lot of websites are not opening. They are blocked, they are restricted. Your search engines are different. So it is very, very restrictive. Possibly a lot of what people check is actually tracked. Now, there is, when it comes to ease of doing business, there is a political risk assessment indicator and gives an idea of how risky is it to deal with a country. Takes into account a lot of components before devising this, and they are ranked from 0 to 100. So let's see where some of the countries rank as far as this PRI index is concerned. So Canada is at the top in the North and Central American region. China is at the top in South American region. Norway for Western Europe. India is top in Central and South Asian region. No surprises, Pakistan is right at the bottom. And Czech Republic is at the top in the Eastern European region. Currently, Russia is at the bottom, which is again, no surprises out there because we all know what's going on in Russia. Who would have thought that war to this extent, you know, border skirmishes keep happening all over the world. But who would have thought that a war of this magnitude, which has completely, you know, taken Ukraine back 200 years, if not more, and look at the loss of life, who would have thought that something like this would happen, not just impacting the region, but then the companies globally, the companies who had to exit, globally, the countries which had to completely stop trading with Russia. Now, for some of the other regions, UAE, as we of course know, you know, is very, very, from a business point of view, very, very popular. So is at the top. And of course, Syria, which is in the hold of, you know, its own civil war between the government and the ISIS and, you know, the proxy war between Russia and America about who is supporting the rebels and who's supporting the government, is right at the bottom. Then you have your Singapore and Hong Kong, which are at the top. These are also two of the regions where two of the countries which are tiger economy countries. And then you have in the Asian region, you have Myanmar, which is right at the bottom. Now, Myanmar in the last few years has they have, of course, always had their junta, which is the government, you know, military junta. And we have been aware of, you know, their former premier Aung San Suu Kyi, who had been under house arrest. But in the last few years, even more, there is complete political unrest. There is a civil war. The Rohingya population, which has been persecuted, and there is mass exodus of ethnic cleansing of the Rohingya population. And also, you know, there is no freedom. We have enough cases in Myanmar of international journalists being jailed out there and being persecuted out there. So it is, again, a country which is at the bottom when it comes to the PRI. Having said that, when it comes to newer markets that countries are looking for, because countries, when they are market seeking, when the investments are market seeking, we know that countries are forever looking to expand their markets and find newer markets. So even countries like China, who are looking to diversify and find newer markets so that they do not face saturation in their existing markets, are looking at countries like Egypt, Myanmar, etc. to expand their markets there. If you look at Sri Lanka, then China has heavily invested in Sri Lanka, and practically every second construction happening in Sri Lanka, whether it is private infrastructure, anything, is Chinese funded. So while we may say it is from a business point of view, for India, it assumes even extra importance because Sri Lanka has a very important strategic location as far as India is concerned. So with China pushing up to Sri Lanka and investing in Sri Lanka, and obviously then getting access to Sri Lanka, is something that India is not very comfortable with and should not be comfortable with, to the extent where during the pandemic, while you know, India was struggling, you know, people were struggling to get their second dose, and you know, there was this long waiting period of 80 days odd, you know, to get your second booster dose. In Sri Lanka, practically the entire population had been vaccinated with their first, second doses very quickly, thanks to Chinese vaccination, you know, initiative out there. So while PRI can be, you know, very restrictive, you have to see how countries like China manage to also, tap into these markets where the PRI may not be very, very attractive, but they are managing to expand their markets constantly. At the end of the day, even law-related factors, whether it's religious law, common law, civil law, impact business, international business. So you cannot, any company or country operating in a certain country cannot overlook these. These become instrumental in how you will conduct your business out there. So when I was giving the example of Indian PSU banks operating in UAE or various other parts, they would have to adhere to the requirements of the local countries and religions. For example, business hours or operations may be different during the months of Ramzan versus the rest of the year. Whereas those same banks, their branches in India may be operating regular business hours out here. So all of these aspects have to be respected and have to be adhered to. Now, for international business, legal factors involve various other things, ensuring safety, competition, your restrictive monopolies should not be encouraged, labor laws, etc. Now, a big thing about labor laws in India becomes, a lot of the MNCs that are operating in India are not very good with or not very receptive to dealing with labor unions or accepting of labor unions. Whereas in India, a lot of the laborers would want to be unionized for their own benefit. So when we see strikes happening, when I was mentioning in a previous chapter, I was also talking about strikes at Samsung plant. Strikes have happened at, the GM plants, which, happened. So across the board, a lot of the strikes are because of labor union issues or the refusal by MNCs to accept certain labor unions or to accept demands. So all of these things have to be taken into account. Freight, etc., environmental laws, intellectual property rights, all of these elements have to be respected. Now, when I gave you the example of Hutchinson SR and Hutchison and Vodafone, then you saw that with an international dispute, how things played out. Now, there are various ways in which disputes can be resolved. In this extreme scenario, the dispute went to, the Permanent Court of Arbitration in The Hague in Netherlands. It was set up in 1899 and it is the oldest body of interstate disputes. There could be mediation which could, resolve something. There could be arbitration. And then, of course, there is litigation. But litigation generally involves very lengthy delays, high costs, bad publicity. And in this example which I gave you, all of those elements came into the picture and would have left a very bad taste for everyone, would have also distressed all the parties involved. Now, when we talk about cultural factors, there is a certain way of doing business, in countries, and those have to be, respected. For example, coming to Japan, and the reason I keep giving example of Japan is because it is one of the, top five economies in the world. As far as being a trading partner, it is a significant trading partner for India. So now in Japan, you have a lot of cultural things which have to be adhered to. I was mentioning about the practice of meishi, which is exchange of business cards which should be printed in English and in Japanese. The business card should be, handed up with the Japanese side facing up. You should not print the invites or material in red, which is considered a color for printing, funeral notices. Gifting anything, corporate gifting is very big the world over, right? But in Japan, gifting anything in number 4 or 9 is not considered good or auspicious. So these may be little things, but you could end up severely offending, you know, someone if you don't adhere to these customs. So there are ways of doing business which have to be respected, and cultural aspects which companies have to learn to respect. Languages can very often, you know, cause an issue. For example, Mandarin, which is the second most widely spoken language in the world. How many, like, you know, when you talk about Indians lobbying with the Chinese that please allow us more access to your markets, please allow us access to your, you know, your Canton Fair, your various trade fairs, etc. Give us more business visas. All of these things are good, but wouldn't it also be helpful if, you know, people being granted these visas were fluent in Mandarin Chinese? And by no means is the language, excuse me, an easy language to master. So language barriers become an influencing factor. And there are certain countries where even though they know English, they will pretend not to know and choose not to deal with you in English and want to deal with you in their own country. So clearly, if there is a, you know, a company that wants to do business, Indian company that wants to do business with in China, it would help them if, you know, in some way they were training a certain set of employees in the language, or they were hiring people who already had a skill set in that language. Another country which is very, very passionate about their language, among, you know, a lot of countries are, but when you talk about Hungary, and then Hungary's national language is called Magyar. It is said to be the second toughest language after Latin. And they are very, very passionate and proud of their language. So much so that till a few years ago, at least, when they used to look at granting Hungarian citizenship to people not naturally born in Hungary, one of the you know, boxes to check, and one of the boxes which gave you extra credit in the direction of getting your citizenship, was whether you knew the Magyar language or not. So there again, doing business, a huge advantage becomes if you know Magyar. Interestingly, China, in this whole endeavor to expand their markets, Hungary is another one of the countries which China is very heavily investing in. In fact, there have been protests within Hungary where local Hungarians don't want that much Chinese investment. There is a university which is to be put up together with the Chinese government, and there have been protests against it. That aside, gives you an idea in terms of where all China is trying to expand to. And clearly, when the Chinese would have chosen to do this business, they would have definitely employed local people who could translate, who could conduct business in the local language, which becomes very important in the Hungarian culture and way of doing things. This gives you a rough idea of the different religions across the world. And religion does become important when it comes to businesses, customs, to the point of product offerings, etc. So, you know, controversies aside, as we respect various other factors of doing international business, religion is also something that one needs to have knowledge of, and also respond with those, you know, honoring those morals and those requirements and those sensitivities. This just gives you an idea in terms of mapping out that previous map, which was showing you the different religions across the world. You have Christianity, Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam, Judaism, and you have to incorporate, you know, the religious aspect also when it comes to, you know, doing business. Now, when it comes to values and attitudes, there is a certain element which goes beyond only a business element. For example, when COVID happened, there were several countries which were absolutely not in a position to, get their vaccinations done or even produce. Now, India, Serum Institute of India, and the vaccine production in India, we exported that vaccine world over, saving so many lives. We even donated millions and millions of units of that vaccine to poorer countries to be able to give this life-saving vaccine to them. So this is an example of values and attitudes which eventually would help for the international cooperation and international collaboration for India, and also improve the image of India. So India's participation in production, distribution, donation of the vaccine during that COVID pandemic was seen world over as a very, very positive example. Other elements which become important are, education, which is, of course, very important. There are various aesthetics, like I told you, in terms of colors. Certain colors are not seen as positive. Certain colors are not associated with, happy occasions. All of these things have to be adhered to when you're dealing with people in that country. And finally, closing this discussion, back to our vaccine initiative. As I told you, when it came to Sri Lanka, the vaccine initiative in Sri Lanka was completely spearheaded by China. And obviously, that would have helped China get very, very close to the people in power in Sri Lanka, over and above, getting some goodwill from the general population, because otherwise the general population in Sri Lanka has been quite skeptical of Chinese investment coming in. But to some extent, even if not to a very large extent, to some extent, the very fact that they got this life-saving vaccination thanks to the Chinese government may possibly alter some negative perception of China among the local population. So likewise, in the case of India, us producing, supplying, donating the vaccination during the pandemic across the world would have positively impacted the image of India and created bonds and created collaboration which can help us in the future in business and other aspects. Thank you.